So let's get going. So who am I and why am I up here talking? I used to run a college website, so a lot of the data that I have is from Google Analytics back then. So some of that is 2 years old, but Google Analytics hasn't changed a lot since then. So you might notice a few discrepancies. I've updated some things, but not everything, because I'm not the Google Analytics power user I used to be. So what do we really want to accomplish here, right? We're going to build the argument of what is the importance of analytics. Why do you want to track it? Why Steve needed to do it 2 years ago. We're going to talk about some key performance indicators. We're going to understand some key terminology, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about what certain things mean inside of analytics. All things Google Analytics, we're going to go through a lot of filters, a lot of things that you can kind of do and, you know, go back and do now. And I think Seth is actually doing a workshop on Wednesday on Google Analytics to kind of carry on with some of this. Some additional analytics stuff and kind of four rules for analytics. Let's get going. A lot of stuff. So I always like starting with this one. You know, if a tree falls in a forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make a sound? Does it matter? You could argue the same kind of thing with a website, right? If you don't know if you're in a forest or you're in the middle of a city, the way that you find out those kind of things is analytics. And the difference between the web and say, print media or television or whatever kind of marketing you've done in the past is you can track everything for the most part. So that's, you know, why this is important, because you want to make sure that you're not in the middle of the forest and that you are in the middle of a busy city. So the second kind of point of this, you know, are you listening to what your visitors are telling you, right? And that's really what we can get out of analytics. So people are visiting certain pages and they're doing certain things, but what are we doing with that? Are we being actionable? Are we making that experience better for them? Are we listening to them? Really, really important thing that you can do now that you couldn't easily do in the past. You know, how are you making web decisions? You know, are you taking this input that people are giving you, this data by what they're doing and what they care about, and institutionalizing and making changes towards that? If you're deciding, you know, we need to change a page on our website, and it says, you know what, we're going to change this page. And if you don't look at something like your analytics, you might be updating and edit a page that gets one page view a month instead of something that's getting 1,000 a month. I mean, where's your time better spent there? How do you know unless you're looking at it? So kind of what is important? Like, what do we really care about on a website, right? And I just tried to outline some possible goals here, right? I mean, obviously from admissions specific, apply to college, right? That's kind of a big deal. That's really, really important. We want to know that. We want to be able to track it. We want to know where those people come from. We want to know why they're here. And right below that, kind of schedule a campus visit, right? You know, a lot of times this leads directly into applying to school. Maybe request information, download a view book, take a virtual tour, you know, sign up for email updates from the school, watch videos, subscribe to RSS, join a Facebook fan page, join a LinkedIn group, read blogs. So a lot of stuff that we want people to do, but how do we know what they're doing and what they care about, what they value? So really, you know, go back and think about what are those action items that we really care about on our website and how are we tracking them? So a couple key performance indicators, and it really does kind of break up into these four different segments here. I always like to start with success, right? Conversions. The single most important part of anything on a website is a conversion event. You know, what is the point of a website? And I know there's a lot of different debates about this and that, but from a marketing standpoint, the most important thing on your website is if you're getting applicants, right? Like, if you're not getting new prospective students coming to apply to your school, you might not have a school anymore in a few years. You know, and how do you measure that success? Are you measuring that success? Do you even care? I hope so. You know, users, segmenting down your audience. You know, what kind of people are coming and visiting your website? What buckets do they fall in? Who are your audiences you're targeting? You know, we all kind of know we've got a couple of different audiences. Prospective students, alumni, faculty, staff, current students, you know, parents. Think about those and think about the different, you know, kind of message you're giving to each of them. The content. Right? You know, what pages are they looking at? What specific things are they looking at? And of course, sources. You know, where are these people coming from? Are they coming from Google? Are they coming from other sites? Are they direct traffic that they typed in the URL? Are they coming from email? A lot of different places. So, kind of understanding some analytical terms, right? That we all kind of think about, you know, oh, we kind of understand the basics. And, you know, stuff like visits, visits by page, absolute unique visits, percent new visits, traffic source, landing pages. I think we all have a pretty good idea about what these are, right? Anybody not? Anybody want to? But there's a couple other ones that can get very confusing. Like, what exactly does a page view mean? Is it important or not? you know, average time on site. And it's just kind of important to make sure that everybody really understands each of these. So something like, you know, page views, what does that mean? Is it good to have a lot of page views per visit or one page view per visit? And it doesn't matter because it's completely dependent on what kind of engagement you have. And the example I always like to give is, all right, if somebody can come to my homepage and I've already identified that the very most important thing to me is them applying to my school, and they can do that in 4 clicks, right? So that if my average page views per visit is 10, am I failing or not? Like, how do you judge that? I mean, that's probably not a good thing if you got that many pages per visit. The flip side is if you've got something like a blog, say like .edu Guru, right? If we've got something like 1.2 pages for page views, that might be a really good thing because that means that everybody that comes to my blog and reads it, they don't need to go to other pages because they're already an advocate for it. They're already a diehard reader, and they've already read everything else on the site. So page views, throw it out. It's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. You can't really gain a lot of insight from it. Average time on site, and this is one that gets really tricky for people. So kind of the example here is if someone came to my homepage at 10 o'clock, 1 minute later they come and visit on the second page, and then 4 minutes later they go to a third page and then leave, right? So the total time on site there is 5 minutes. Because to the tracking code, there is no way of knowing how long someone was on that last page. Because there's a timestamp that's taken every time someone, you know, renders a page, they pull it down to look at it. But on that last one, you don't go to a fourth page, so you don't know how long you were on that third page. So keep in mind that time on site is always dependent on minus that last page and how long people were there. So bounces and exit rates, right? You know, it's kind of important to remember that a bounce is always an exit, but an exit is not always a bounce. It's kind of the, you know, inclusive. So a bounce is if someone comes to your homepage and then they leave your site immediately. They zero out the window, they click on a link that takes them to another website, whatever, that's a bounce. One page, gone. An exit is always the last page that they were on. So if they go and start out on your homepage, go to your admission page, and then go to your application to apply, you know, we've got an exit because that last page here has a bounce on it, but they actually visited some pages on the site so that this first few pages wasn't necessarily an exit from your site from that. Does that make sense? Just remember, it's always an inclusive kind of thing, that a bounce is always an exit, but an exit is not always a bounce. So when you're looking at those, you know, notice kind of the difference there. So traffic types, you know, there are a couple different traffic types that you'll kind of see here. And the ones that kind of stand out right are organic. You know, organic is what comes from search engines. It's people that are going and looking for stuff and then organically clicking on results to take them to your site. The other thing that kind of comes from search engines is something called PPC or CPC, depending on how it displays up here. If you're doing something like Google AdWords or any kind of ad campaigns, you'll see that. If you're not doing that and you're like, Kyle, what are you talking about? Don't worry about it. Of course, referral sites is someone else that out in the web that is linking to you. That's kind of what that is. And of course, direct traffic. And you can have other, you know, different sources in here, which we'll talk about later how you can go about tagging those things. So benchmarking, there's a lot of different ways that you can benchmark stuff. Three of the bigger data providers, and you know, why do you want to benchmark? Because maybe you care like, well, I think we're getting about this much traffic. How do we stand up against our competition? You know, our peer institutions, our rivalry schools, whatever it is. So here's kind of three different sources you can look at. Alexa's pretty good. I think Quantcast is really good. They give you a lot of this demographic data you can kind of see here if you're just kind of curious. And Compete is another one. With all of these, it's not going to be 100% accurate. It's guesstimations, right? It's guesstimates. I love that word. So you can get an idea, all right, what are we kind of looking at? Because you have no way of knowing your competitors' traffic, just like they have no way of knowing yours, because they can't see your Google Analytics account or whatever you're using. So this is something you can kind of do to cross-compare how you're doing. Three different services here. This is a nice little tool that me and a couple of other guys at New Cloud build out. It's called EduRank. You can go, the link's there in the bottom. You know, just run it through, and we pull from some of these kind of sites and give you a ranking based on 1,600 schools we've kind of got in the index. If you're just kind of curious, how do I stand up against other people? Pulls from some of those resources we just looked at. And of course, even in Google Analytics, You can go opt into this, and it's kind of buried, but you can kind of see from the law and government education colleges and universities, you can see kind of how you stack up against all the other colleges and universities that opt into this. But it's always going to be, you know, very, very different because, you know, comparing a little private school that has 2,000 students to a big school like Florida that has, you know, 50,000, it's hard to really compare because that's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But it's another good place you can kind of look. So there are a lot of different analytics packages. There are a lot of different analytics solutions. And Avinash, who's kind of one of these visionaries, one of these brilliant guys in the web analytics space, kind of his rule is kind of interesting. It's kind of the 90-10 rule that you play with analytics that basically says of your budget, if you're going to spend $100,000 in analytics, you should spend $90,000 of that towards someone who actually interprets the data and $10,000 towards a solution. Don't go buy some big expensive solution if you have no one that actually knows how to read it. Good thing about Google Analytics and all these guys right here, they're free. So it's a great place to kind of start. There are a lot of other kind of analytic packages you can buy. Yeah, we've even got one at HubSpot. But you know, I think for getting going in this, start out with Google Analytics. It's free. You're not going to pay anything. But a couple of things to kind of understand about why it's free. You know, we always think of Google as this do no evil, big, gigantic entity. They do make some money in some ways. So just kind of know that 98% of Google's revenue comes from advertising. Comes from when you're on a Google search, those ads that go on the top. That's why they want to collect more analytics on the web. The more they know, the better able to serve they are to serve up results. So, you know, they're giving you this data for free, but you bet your pretty penny they're also looking at it too. More they know, the better they can serve up ads. And also, because they're bread and butter, 98% of their revenue comes from AdWords. It has very, very tight integration with Google Analytics. So if they can get you using one tool for free, it's like, well, you know what, I'd like to buy some traffic. Great. Now they've got that tight integration, then kind of upsell you from there. So be a little bit smart about why this is. I know there's a lot of security concerns in higher education about, is Google Analytics okay? You know, it's kind of like, I guess the rule of thumb I'd say is everybody's kind of using it. It's Google, right? They're the biggest website, the biggest web player out there. They're not going to do anything malicious. They're not going to do any spammy because what's the first thing that's going to happen? We're all going to be tweeting about it, and we're going to quit using it. I mean, they've got too much on the line to not make this thing rock solid. So installing Google Analytics is pretty simple. They've actually updated the code, but this is kind of the old one that still works just fine. I kind of underlined this little line here because it's kind of something special you can do, and we'll look at this in some filters. I don't know if you still have to do this or not. So this is one area where this session might be a little bit dated, but it's still pretty awesome, right? Y'all are getting some good stuff out of this, right? All right, so installing Google Analytics, there are a couple tools. Once you get this tracking coded on your site, and literally, installing Google Analytics is something that should take no more than 5 seconds. Grab this code that we just looked at. Go into your template of your website. Hopefully, you've got a template, and every page is in static HTML or CMS or something. And you want to input this code right above the closing body tag. And the reason you want to input it above the closing body tag is because you don't want this thing slowing down the page load time, right? You want to have that great user experience. Google's not going to load something slow, but still, put it at the bottom. Everything else gets rendered, then they load that. But here are two free tools. Actually, they're free to an extent. SiteScan and Wasp that will actually crawl your entire website to make sure that you've got the code installed on every page. Because once again, the data is only as good as you set it up. So if you're missing pages that don't have Google Analytics installed, it might be a page that's getting a lot of traffic and you don't know anything about it. Specifically, kind of a plug for Wasp here. Anybody wants to tweet me, I've got a free professional account with these guys to give away. Met some of their product owners. Send me a tweet, I'll dissect them and give somebody a free account. So. Really cool tool. They actually do a lot more than Google Analytics. They can see like 200 different analytics tracking codes and let you know if it's on all your pages. So send me a tweet and I'll give you a free account with them. One person. All right, data overload here. So, right, we get Google Analytics installed. We've got it running on our site. We forget about it because we get dragged into 100 different directions. And we come back a month later and look at it and we're like, holy cow. What do I do with this? I don't know what to do. I'm overloaded. Like, there's too much data in here. What does it mean? I can't really understand it. So what's really important is you can actually come in here and start segmenting and filtering this data to get down to what are the actionable steps I can take away. So when you first kind of set it up, it asks you for a Google Analytics profile. And what's important to remember is you can have up to 100 different profiles that you set up on one tracking code. That's good, that's big. And you can kind of see a little bit of the specific things here. You know, make sure you kind of define your site URL with or without the www, right? You know, this is branding purposes. I can get into a whole other debate about which one's better. There is no right or wrong answer. It's more about how you want to brand and market. Set up a default page. Let Google know what your default page is. You know, exclude any URL queries. You know, if you've got certain stuff that, you know, canonical issues that kind of show up that, well, this page loads with this, but I'm doing that for some other reason, whether it's a tracking token or something, make sure you tell it to exclude those. And definitely, definitely do this last one to set up site search. We're going to talk about a whole great wealth of information you can get just from that. So Google Analytics profiles, and this is kind of what I had set up in Wofford back in the day, and you'll see like there's 13 different profiles. But why this is really valuable is because you've got different people in your institution that care about different things. So like I've got a default one here that has all the data coming into and I can read it for when I want to. I've got one that's raw that I have none of these filters or any of these things set up, which I'll show you some of those. A sandbox one, if I'm gonna set up a new filter, I'm gonna play around with it. I'm not sure if it works or not. I'll set it up in the sandbox. But then I've got one for admission only, off-campus visitors. Off-campus visitors. So the admission people don't care about all this other stuff. They just care about their own subdirector, maybe even their own subdomain. So we can actually break it out and set up something so that they can get their data. Same for athletics, same for alumni, GIFs, you know, whatever else, the blogs. Now you can set up all of these different ones and track them as individual segments, but then also have a big one where it all kind of comes back into. So the first thing that'll probably happen when you set up Google Analytics, you'll get something like this. And like, what's wrong with this picture? Anybody want to guess? They are all the same. Give that young. They're all the same, but they're it's the same page, but we're seeing four different results. How do you deal? I mean, that does, you can't read that. So what you've got to kind of get in here and do is set up a couple of things so that you get this all down to one result. And the first thing you can kind of set up is all lowercase filter, because you'll notice that, all right, there's a capital D here, there's a lowercase d here, but no, they're all the same page. So you can kind of come in here and really easily, and by the way, all of this is up on the blog, so there's lots of stuff you can kind of get to later. Set up this nice little thing that makes all your results and displaying Google Analytics in lowercase. This is kind of, everybody should just set this one up. It's the one easy one that just always, always needs to be done. The second one kind of going to with the www or non-www, unless you've got 301 redirect set up one way or the other, to Google, these are the same page and it's duplicate content. But you don't want it to show up in your analytics as two different things. So make sure you set up one way or the other. It's all about branding. It depends on which way is better for you. Personally, I like without dubs because it's a lot less to type in. But some people might like it with it. For branding reasons, it's your decision. Set up subdomain traffic. So let's say that you've got a subdomain. For example, back in the day, I think they did away with this, but Wofford had their whole athletics was on a subdomain on the main website. I wanted to set up a filter so that those guys could track that separately in their own profile, but we could also aggregate it in a bigger profile too so that they could get their reporting without seeing everything else. So here's a way you can kind of track subdomains separately without tracking them inside the rest of their traffic using the same tracking code. And there's a lot more filters here because you don't always care about everything, right? So this is one that you would put on maybe your master account that I want to set up and monitor everything, all the subdomains, so that if you've got a blog subdomain for, you've got a WordPress install or a TypePad or something, but you want to aggregate that in your big bucket, you can kind of do that with this filter here. Great tool to use. Exclude IP traffic filter. Right, and this is especially important for those departments that are facing externally, like your admission and your alumni. If you're an admission department, you probably don't care about people at the school that are visiting your admission page, right? Who cares about us? I want to know what are these people, what is my audience doing? So if you work with your network administrator, if he can give you the IP address range for all your internal traffic, guess what? Boom, filter it out, clean up your data. make a lot more sense of it. Because if you've got a page, and if you don't do this, and if you're looking at something like a schedule a campus tour, and you've got 300 views, but 100 of them are your web guy because he's been working on that page and making some adjustments, you know, that's not really what's going on there to your general audience. Great, great filter. Directory filter. So this way that if you do have your admission department that's on a subdirectory of your site, you could set up a profile for them that just monitors that traffic. And this is kind of the filter you would apply to that profile. You could say, all right, for the admission people, I want to set up a profile that just looks at this subdirectory and excludes all external traffic. And say, here you go. And they've got something segmented. They've got something meaningful to them without having to look at the bigger picture there. Country filter. And this is really, you know, depending on what kind of audience, if you're a community college, you're probably not getting something like a lot of international students, right? Or maybe you are targeting internationally. You can kind of come in here and set up different things for country, region. There's one for city. You know, if you're a community college, maybe you don't care about people that are visiting your college that are outside of your own city. So set up a profile for that and just kind of monitor that in there. You know, a lot of different things you can do with this filter. Full referral URL filter. Now this is, Google Analytics does this a little tricky, and they might have changed this. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. That if you go to referral sources, it doesn't always tell you the exact URL that visited the site. They'll tell you, here's the domain, here's the website that sent some. Well, I want to know exactly what page that link was on. You can kind of set this up on a profile and say, oh, well, I got a link from, you know, some government site, but it was exactly this page, and then you can go kind of look at it. This is kind of cool if you're an SEO junkie, too. These two definitely go well together. So tracking and tagging. There's a lot of different ways, as we talked about, you can kind of segment your audience. So by far and away the best way to do this, and this is one of those things that, like, it's really complicated to kind of wrap your mind around destination URL tagging, but once you get it right, it's magical, especially for stuff like email marketing, offline campaigns, because you might have a page and you've got a billboard, and you want to know, I only want to know people that come and visit this page. So you've got a nice little short URL that you give them, and you set up a 301 redirect to some landing page. You can assign some of these tags, these tracking tokens, to the end of this URL, and be able to say, oh, these people came from this billboard instead of something else. Who out there has kind of seen those TV commercials that say, to learn more about our site, visit oursite.com/TV10. Y'all probably seen those, right? Those guys are telling you, we've got at least 9 other commercials, and we're measuring the effectiveness of each of them against each other. All those TV10, TV9, they've all got this kind of destination URL set up in the back end that redirects them to the same landing page. They're not testing the landing page. They're testing which commercial is more effective. You know, you can do the same kind of thing if you're doing, I like to call it snail mail. You know, if you're doing student mailings, and you want to know, well, was this mailing more effective than this one? We're sending them the same page. You can kind of use this kind of stuff to track that. So when to tag URLs, there's kind of 3 big buckets this falls into, right? Email marketing, 99% of all email providers will do this for you. You just got to kind of dig around the settings somewhere and try to find, like, Google standard tokens, turn those on. Your analytics will be 100 times better. Paid search, is anybody out there doing PPC? Do people do PPC? I see a few hands. So underutilized in higher ed. It's a great way to start to drive target traffic, especially for enrollment purposes. But if you're doing that, you definitely want to be tagging that traffic. And finally, it's kind of those offline event trackings. Offline event, you know, can be a lot of different things. And what I always recommend that when you're doing this, build a spreadsheet so that you can kind of easily keep up with of all these campaigns you're doing. Little URL down here in the bottom, bit.ly/URL builder. This is a Google spreadsheet that I built. You can go get it, download it, reuse it for your own purposes. But you basically kind of, you know, give it the description, give it the URL, give it the source media campaign, and boom, it busts you out this destination URL. So you don't have stuff like, all right, we call it e-mail in one campaign and then email in another one. It's real important to be consistent with these tracking tokens because it's going to look so much weirder in your reports if you don't. You can also track links. This is another cool thing that you can do. You can do this for a lot of things. You can actually track flash inside of Google Analytics using these on-click events. You can track file downloads. So in this specific example, you can kind of see, you know, this is a link on the Wofford website where we sent people to download our viewbook. Is that kind of important to know if anybody's downloading your viewbook or not? I mean, that's kind of cool to say, oh, well, we're having 100 people downloaded a month, or we're having 500 people downloaded a month. You know, so, and you can easily kind of see that this kind of thing, this is some things I used to put up on Guru a while back, that we've got this little PDF directory, and I can see, oh, this was Rachel Rubin's social media report that she put up 2 years ago, and in that time frame, I think it was like a month or whatever, we had 60 people download it. Kind of cool to be able to know that. So it's really easy to track those things. That, you know, stuff like your course catalog, you probably want to know how many people are downloading that, right? Definitely the view book. There are probably some other things out there. You can tag audience segments too. So here's a couple of ways that you can set up these page trackers to actually track. If you've got a campaign that you're only driving prospective students to it, you might want to segment by that. So you can say, oh, here's the campaign. We only drove prospective students to this page. If they come through this channel, we can kind of track them that way. I've never really used this a lot, so I'm assuming it works right. If somebody's got a better way to do it, let me know. All right, so reporting. So there's a lot of reports in Google Analytics. I'm just going to kind of run through a couple of my favorites and why, how you should really be using them. So site search. I mentioned this way back when we were setting it up. It's like it's important to set up site search. And the reason for that is this is where you find out where you're failing. That if people are having to use your internal site search, it means they can't find something on your site that's really valuable to them. So in this case, the number one thing that people can't find on the website is bookstore. Well, we probably want to make that a little bit more obvious, right? Because there are two kind of people that use your site search. Those people that are desperate and they can't find what you're looking for, or people that are just plain lazy. You know, there's a lot of us, we get to a website, we know we want to look for it. We don't want to try to find it, we just want to search for it. So help those people out. You'll notice in kind of the top 10 results here, it's interesting that 2, 5, and 6, employment, human resources, jobs. Well, we've obviously got a lot of people here looking to get a job. Might want to make it a little bit more obvious for those kind of people to find that so they're not searching our website. So this is telling us kind of where we're failing, and then kind of some statistics about that. How many people are searching? But they haven't, you know, how many times do they have to reiterate on that search? How deep are they going? Keyword report. One of the big things about SEO, everybody's probably heard of keywords, the buzz around keywords. Keywords are what people look for. Not surprisingly, this is taken from Wofford, that the first 9 items all have Wofford in it. You know, not surprising at all. But then notice like number 10 here, Betsy Cox novels. Betsy is she's a professor at Wofford who's a famous novelist. Well, knowing that we're getting search traffic, people are going to Google and typing that in, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that you can get there. If you want to learn a lot more about SEO, I'll be in some other room right after this presentation to give you 75 more slides on that. But the big thing to note is, like, this is your low-hanging fruit. Find what people are looking for on your site and are trying to find and make those pages more obvious. Do some optimization around them. You'll get a lot more traffic from them. Content by title report. Once again, this one ties directly into SEO. You know, these are the page titles for those pages. If it's not really clear and obvious that what each one of these is, you know, you've got some cleanup work to do, because this becomes especially important for Google, because when someone goes and searches Google, this is the results that show up. So that if every single page on the site were to say Wofford College Quintessential Liberal Arts Education, well, that doesn't help me if I'm looking for the biology section, does it? So you want to make sure that every one is specific and unique to really describe what the page is about. And the best way to do that is this report right here, because you can easily kind of scan through things like, that. What does that title mean? And go look at the page and say, oh, we need to clean that up a little bit. Referring site report, another good one. You know, where are we getting traffic from that's not necessarily Google or direct traffic? Pretty interesting here, and of course this data, this screenshot's 2 years old now, but Wofford.fyi is kind of a recruitment portal we had. Tear Your Fans is kind of a forum where sports fans could go talk about what's going on. Facebook's right up there. Go Upstate's the local newspaper, but it's, you know, it's important to know who's linking to you. Who is sending traffic to me? Can be especially important if there's these certain kind of communities out here who are really talking about you, to go out and engage with them more to, you know, get additional links, nurture them along. They're obviously rabid fans, kind of support with them. And just see where you're getting your traffic from, because there's a lot of times you'll be like, wow, we're getting a lot of traffic from that. Where is it going? What are we doing with it? Are we getting any value out of it? 404 error page reporting, right? Does everybody know what a 404 page is here? So it sucks, right? It's so frustrating when you get to a 404 page. Well, this is a big usability thing. You can actually set up kind of a filter in Google Analytics, and there's a whole blog post about how to do this. From that, the very top, there's links. So that I can see, these are pages that people are trying to find on my site that's sending them to the 404 page. So they're looking for athletics, football, default, something, something, something. You can drill down and look at it. Well, I'm failing right there. Everybody that, all 12 of these people, I think in the last 2 weeks that tried to visit this page, had a sucky experience. They tried to go see something. It wasn't there. We failed them. So go get those kind of things cleaned up. You're a better user experience. It's great for SEO because they're clicked on something. And it's really, really good to kind of set up these things. Like a perfect one is, I remember that people would go type in wofford.edu/math, looking for the mathematics department. We called it mathematics. Why not go ahead and set up a redirect form right there? Go clean it up for them. There's always a debate, do we call it admission or admissions with an S? You're using one, you're not using the other. I guarantee you people are typing in the other one. Go set up a redirect and then kind of make that experience better for them. This is how you learn about where those low-hanging fruit are. So goal tracking is probably the most important, biggest thing that you can get out of Google Analytics. You know, there's nothing more important to be able to say that, you know, Seth and I were talking about this earlier, and he's got a great workshop that is really focusing on this. Unfortunately, I'm not focusing on this in this presentation. But let's say that you do have a schedule a campus tour, or, you know, to come by, schedule a campus visit, and you know that 25% of people that schedule a campus visit actually apply to your school. And you know that you accept 25% of applications. And you know that the average student stays 3 years and is worth X dollars to me. Well, you can actually compute an ROI for anybody that completes that event, right? Well, get in there and put up a goal conversion event, especially if you're trying to get credibility with your boss. And you can kind of say, well, we know that it's worth X. You know, do the math backwards. And if you can say, well, this form is generating X dollars worth of revenue, you really build a lot of credibility for yourself. And you really help by the authority and the support to get more things pushed towards that direction. Goal tracking is really, really important. You can kind of see where conversions happen. Seth's doing a workshop on Wednesday. There's your plug. So there's a lot more, though, right? You've got all these other channels that people are kind of coming and visiting your website. Newsletters, Facebook, TV, LinkedIn, direct mail, email, identity management. And we'll kind of start with these with offline campaigns. I kind of mentioned these earlier, right, that you can track this kind of stuff. You can tell if someone comes and visits my website from a link in the newspaper if you set it up right. Because the problem with all of these forms of traditional media that we don't have the problem with online is we can track it. You know, if you do a radio commercial and you put it on when your team's out playing a basketball game and you promote something on your website, you have no way of knowing how effective that was unless you set up one of these kind of campaigns. It's the only way you can do it is if you drive them online. So in this example, kind of these are a couple of newsletters that we used to do. You know, tear your top five, kind of building up some stuff towards homecoming, and then kind of the newsroom where we send out news releases. Well, each of these links kind of has these tracking tokens I was talking about earlier. So that afterwards, I can actually come in here, and this is Bronto for this specific homecoming event, and I can look in Bronto, my email marketing thing, and get an idea about, you know, how many people clicked through things, how many people came and looked at stuff, but that only tells me half the picture. That tells me they clicked through in the email. I want to know what happened to them once they clicked through it. And by setting up these tracking tokens that we talked about earlier, you can actually see that in Google Analytics. You can see that, wow. All right, we actually, not only did we get traffic to the site, this is the homecoming one, but what's really interesting is look how many people actually kept that email and were still continuing to read it, you know, 2 months later. That's kind of an insight that, you know, you wouldn't have otherwise if you didn't have these two things set up and linked together. So you can see the other side of the event, especially if you've got the goal conversion set up on it, then you know, well, this email actually drove this much revenue to our website. Big picture stuff, right? Big insight. How many of you today have any idea whether an email that you sent out actually, how it impacted some kind of campaign that you were running? That you can actually trace the steps all the way through? A few of you. How important would you say that is to like decision making? Yeah. Right. Yeah, it does. You're right. It does take some work to kind of really take a look at everything. But, you know, if you're talking about a get big campaign, you want to know how effective it was, especially if you're trying it through multiple channels. Email is just one of those channels. You know, snail mail's not necessarily dead, especially for something like homecoming here that goes to alumni. You know, your alumni members that are 60 years old, they're probably not as active on email, but they do know how to use a website to an extent. So blogs, you know, a couple things to know about blogs, you know, two big tools, FeedBurner, share this, that's really it, you know, be able to track that kind of stuff. FeedBurner gives you a lot of picture, like how many people are, you know, you've probably seen this, any blog that you look up now, it kind of shows you the subscriber numbers. A lot of them have that publicized. FeedBurner is really the only good way to get any kind of idea about how many people are reading a blog. And the way that it, or any RSS feed for that matter. And the way that it works is that it looks at the daily pings to that feed. So that feed's sitting out there somewhere, and anytime someone pings it for information, it looks at unique pings in a day. So, you know, if something like .edu grew, we've got 2,000 readers if you look at the thing. That means that in the last 24 hours, or yesterday, 2,000 people went out pinging that feed to look for it. It's also why you'll notice that if you ever look in, like, RSS subscriber counts, on the weekends it always dumps way down and then jumps back up, because no one opens up their reader on the weekends. Or fewer people do. So it kind of gets volatile through the week, but you know, setting up FeedBurner is really, really important if you care about those kind of numbers. Very good way to measure engagement. And then kind of that share this widget, you've probably seen it, it's getting really popular for people that like to share your content through social media channels or email. Really good, they've got some pretty basic analytics you can get on the back end. But what's really interesting is even now as we talk about how important social media, Twitter, Facebook, all this stuff is, Email is still the prominent way that people share content through the web. So email is not dead, as I argued 2 years ago. So web analytics 2.0, kind of, you know, get into, now that you kind of understand all the basics, you know, there's a lot more that goes into this. And Avinash, you know, really talks about, you know, you understand the data, but there's still another piece to it. And that's where stuff like doing surveys, SurveyMonkey's a great free tool. You know, what's really become popular is just Google Docs, right? You could set up a Google form and request information, dump it in a nice spreadsheet. You know, survey your audience. You know, you could see that a lot of people are coming looking at a certain page, but that only tells you half the story. Find out how they're interacting with the page. Find out why it's valuable to them. It's okay to survey your audience every now and then, especially those audiences are really important to you. Because there are, actually, this is a slide that's probably outdated. There are not all these different social media sites anymore, right? We've really kind of condensed down to, you know, two winners and a tier 1A one. You've got Facebook and Twitter, and then LinkedIn's kind of a tier down. Those are kind of the big boys, right? Because you can monitor something like the growth of Facebook over time. Facebook's got this nice little insights. Get in there if you've got, I'm sure everybody has a fan page for your school. You can also do things like set up groups. You know, it's good to see that engagement growing over time, but that's about all you can really do with it, I think. Hope I'm not shooting myself. Same for LinkedIn, but LinkedIn doesn't give you any data. So that if you want to track something like maybe an alumni group on LinkedIn, you really have to do it through something like set up a Google Doc and remember once a week or once a month to get in there and look at the growth of it. This is 2 years old, but when Wofford set up their LinkedIn alumni network, I kind of set a personal goal that said, you know what, I want to get to 200 members of this group in the next month and a half. And worked with the alumni and worked with things through the website, so we made different places that are on the website that drove people to that. We did certain email campaigns, and as you can see here, kind of, you know, once a week I went into a spreadsheet that I was keeping track of and kind of kept track of it. I don't think we hit our goal in my timeline, but we did hit it. But, you know, you've got to do this extra legwork on your own to keep up with LinkedIn. It's surprising they still haven't fixed that. YouTube gives you all kind of really cool analytics. Once again, this kind of goes down to keywords, too. Think about relevant keywords. Think about what people are looking at. Also, think about how you're promoting it, where people are watching it. And then finally, kind of like monitoring your online identity. How many of y'all have a Google Alerts account that just kind of sends you stuff regularly? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the big one. It's kind of become the de facto. There are a lot of like RSS feeds you can... This is my insanity of trying to keep up with all mentions of Wofford a while back, but I realized that one email a day from Google Alerts did everything. There's a takeaway. Don't try to kill yourself like I used to. But monitor what people are out there saying, and especially monitor what links you're getting. And kind of finally, viral campaigns. Viral videos, it's like magic in a bottle, right? You never know when you're going to find a good one. And you just got to kind of keep trying. There's been a lot of interesting discussion on blogs recently. This is a cool story how, you know, our president 3 years ago now went and did a TED Talk. And, you know, usually you think of a viral video had to be something that's like 5 minutes long or less to be viral. This is a 20-minute talk that just went all over the place. I think Chris Brogan blogged about it before anybody even knew who Chris Brogan was. I was like, oh, that guy. I know him. All right. So final thoughts here. How are we doing on time? We got a few minutes left. Wow, I made it through all that. Number one, so kind of the four takeaways, if you take anything away, always be testing, right? You know, kind of set up campaigns. You know, there's a lot of different tools you can use here. Think ahead of time, like, what do I want to accomplish with this? And set up and just be testing it. You know, testing different links to different places. Set up different little testing environments that you can do. Because you never really know what you're gonna have, what's gonna happen until you're just gonna throw it out there and see what the results bring back. Don't get caught up looking at all the numbers. Look at the trends. This is a big one. Looking at something like, well, we had X number of visits last month and this number of visits this month. What does that really mean? You know, look at the trends over time. Most likely during the summer months, all of you are going to have a drop in traffic, right? That's just the nature of it. So you can't really compare that month to month. But you can look at the trends. And once you've got over a year's worth of data, well, how does May of 2009 compare to May of 2010? You know, are we continuing to get more traffic? And trends also from campaign to campaign. You know, how are we growing those? You know, set up a reporting schedule and track key metrics. You know, kind of find out what those free metrics or those metrics you really care about are and track them. I've got a couple of old reports I could probably send people. They're buried on the Guru blog of monthly reports that I used to put together for Wofford. You know, figure out what these things are. You want one way to get credibility. Put together a monthly report that you can kind of present to. I sent this to the whole president and cabinet. They all didn't care about the web all the time, but once a month I could drop something in their inbox to get them a little bit excited about it and give them a big footprint. Really, really important to kind of do this. It takes time, but, you know, you don't have time to spend every single day in analytics. We just don't. But if you can block off half a day once a month, it's a lot more realistic, and you're going to get a lot more actionable things. And, you know, goes right into this, set goals. You know, I love the idea of kind of setting monthly goals. What do you want to accomplish this month? You know, knowing kind of the cycle of the year and kind of looking at things like analytics, you know, when it's certain time, you'll notice that certain things are happening. Like the beginning of the school year, certain things are more hot and people are looking for them. Knowing that ahead of time or knowing that from year to year, you can kind of set goals. All right, before September 1, we need to make sure that all our content for stuff like Greek life is ready, that all our stuff for incoming students is ready, and making sure that those kind of things are set up, you know, they're optimized the right way, and they're easy for people to find. And finally, just to kind of leave you with some takeaways, you know, set some goals. You know, I challenge you, each of you, to kind of do some, take one of these, take none of these, make up your own. But, you know, I want to say that our campus gets X campus visits scheduled a month, right? If that's something important to you from a recruitment standpoint, track it and be able to say, all right, we've got 20 visits scheduled, 150 visits scheduled last month. We want to shoot for 160 next month. Track it and see how you push it, because that'll get your decisions about how you set up your websites and how you target different things really make you think about those. So it might say, well, you know, we don't have a link on this page that's related to that content that links people to our schedule a visit form. But you might go back and do it because now you've got an actionable goal you're shooting for. Number of ViewBook downloads a month. If that's kind of important, shoot for a goal. You'll probably do the same sort of thing. You'll think, well, is this a page that makes sense to link to that? Lower bounce rate on specific landing page, X over next month. So if you've got a specific conversion page and you know that people are bouncing from it, you know, maybe you shorten up the form. Maybe you try to make the copy stand out a little bit more to increase the conversion rate. Maybe conversion rate's not as important to you as the actual number of conversions. So you drive more traffic to it, you get a lower conversion rate, but you're getting more people converting. I mean, you know, what are your goals and kind of work towards them? Generate donor email campaign to generate X amount over next month. So, all right, we're gonna send out an email campaign, and we're going to try to drive this amount of money. Well, you've got the tools now to track that. Now put it all together and give yourself a target, set a goal. And, you know, once again, once you have it set up, you can test it for next time. So you've got kind of incremental things as you go. Increase our video exposure X percent for next month. Because if you're trying to drive people to your videos, you're going to be doing other things through social media, throughout the website, to drive people to those things. Promote an increased presence on a social network by X percent. If you want to do a big campaign to grow your Facebook reach, you're probably going to do things to work towards that. Finally, a couple other kind of closing out things. If you haven't seen Corrine's Higher Ed Analytics Revolution, I definitely recommend checking out this site. She's got kind of here these 12 metrics that every website, every college should kind of at least benchmark themselves by. Great little survey, like fill it out, join, like they're sharing data, it's benchmarking against other institutions. Fill out the quick little survey, it's a great little resource to kind of check out. Let's get everybody on Google, you know, on analytics standards so that we can kind of compare it and we're all pushing forward and know what's going on. So important to what you're doing. And it buys you a lot of credibility. So kind of a couple of readings to kind of close that. As I mentioned again, .edguru.com/webanalytics has got everything I just talked about in blog format. There's posts on every single one of them. Occam's Razor here, that's Avinash's blog. This is his book on the right-hand side. I've mentioned him a couple of times. The dude's a genius. He works for Google now. He's like their Google Analytics czar of the world. Shelby Thayer, you probably know her. She's a great higher education blogger on web analytics. And then, of course, the Google Analytics blog. Great, great resource. When new things come out, these guys are the ones to talk about it. So if I'm understanding, you're asking me, because something like WordPress or any of these blogs generate the feed, right? And you're asking, do you need to set all of those up with FeedBurner links? Sure. What you need to do is set up FeedBurner as like the intermediary step so that you've got your feed that your journal's pushing out, and we push it through FeedBurner, and then what you pull on this dashboard or whatever else is using that FeedBurner feed. That way it gets all kind of the back-end analytics. And it also does stuff like can standardize the feed. So the question was, how do you know that FeedBurner is counting people? And kind of the reality, I guess you don't. So it could be that you could have 10 subscribers to a blog, and one of them could be a Twitter account that you've got set up that's automatically pinging that feed to post to a Twitter blog. One could be some search engine that's crawling that feed and getting it. I guess it's not necessarily people, it's direct interactions with it. They're unique. And as one individual, if I'm doing something like I've got a feed set up with something like a Google Reader, but I've also got something set up in my inbox, I'm technically hitting that feed twice. It is kind of those kind of things. But it's two unique ways of interacting with it. It's definitely not a perfect metric, but like it's better than nothing, because the alternative not using FeedBurner is nothing. I'm surprised that Google has not integrated FeedBurner in with Google Analytics. They bought FeedBurner like 3 years ago, and it's still not integrated. It's I don't know why, though. So the question is about custom reporting. And, you know, when I first did this presentation, they didn't really have custom reporting. I've done a little bit with it. What I found was fun was kind of custom reporting off of stuff like social media services and kind of seeing which way you can pull that. If you're doing stuff like the tagging that I was talking about earlier, that's gorgeous for custom reporting, because you can really segment these different campaigns that you're driving stuff in, and it's the only way to really look at it in one format that's really clean. Yeah, but I haven't used a lot of that. I'm sure Seth could probably go a lot deeper than that. Yes? So the question is, if you change a URL, is there a way to know that they're the same page, I guess, right? Not really. The only thing you can do is kind of look at that data going forward. Because if you set up 301 redirects right, there won't ever be any analytics associated with the old page. Because a lot of times that redirect is rendered before it even gets down to the tracking code. But there's no real good way to say, hey, I know all this traffic's associated with this page, now make it this page, unless you were to go write, you know, custom filters for every single one of those, and that's probably a lot more work than you want, unless, I don't think there's a way of just mass importing that in. I haven't. This is where Google Analytics and me kind of separated when I went to HubSpot, and we've got our own analytics, and I've kind of been focusing on that. I'm gonna dump it to Seth, because he could probably go into that a lot deeper than I can. Yeah, that's true. So if you couldn't hear him, like anything it's like Ajax or Flash, things like that, that are like, it's not necessarily rendering a whole new page, but specific events on a page. I think that does kind of go with that whole on-click that I was talking about with downloading files. It's kind of be as creative as you want. I think there is a post that on Guru that Nick DeNardis wrote a while back, how he actually uses that same event to track external links. So you could actually set it up that if I know there's any links that are leaving my site, I can track them using that same event tracking, and you have some sort of special way, a special profile filter of reporting on it. But that gets a little bit, you know, there's some cool advanced stuff too, because you need some special JavaScript. I know there's a WordPress one. So the question was, do you know of any plugins or tools that allow you to track that kind of off-site? I know there is one for WordPress. The last time I looked at it, it was like a year ago. It was very much kind of still in development. I think it worked, but you had to go do some custom things, your template. I'm sure it's a lot farther along than that now. As far as specific other CMSs, I don't really know. There's probably a way you could do that with CSS, though. All right. Well, guys, thanks for coming. I got a few more of these. If you want some free swag, come up and get it. And come to SEO and some other room in a few minutes, and I'll keep talking.